We're on.
Ya estás grabando. Chido.
Amazing. You
start? Do you want me to do the intro? No, you do the. I always do the outro, so you do the intro.
Okay, done. Yeah? All right.
This is gonna be part of the episode.
Yeah. Right? Okay, go.
Guys, thank you for joining us.
Pleasure.
It's great to have you on board. I was telling you before that, you know, who's best with this but yourself. So, you know, like, who are you? Tell us a little bit about you.
Sure. I'm Simon Hipgrave. I'm the co-founder of Hungry Workshop with Jenna, and I'm the general manager and co-founder of Bone Digital as well. So,
yeah.
Jenna?
It's a short introduction.
Yeah.
You have to be modest.
We can get into the detail.
Later, yeah.
I'm Jenna. I am the many things at Hungry Workshop. I'm one of them, the co-founder. I keep trying to settle on the title that I want, but I keep changing, so we'll see.
What are the options?
Well, so, director,
yeah.
CEO, but I don't think you can be CEO unless you have a board, but I'm not sure yet.
Really? Is that right. The rule?
I don't know.
Yeah.
Okay. Creative director, production director?
Yeah, okay. Right.
There's lots of options.
You both are the real hybrids, the real, what was that word you used before? The unicorns.
The real unicorns,
the real unicorns,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah, because you have a digital, so... Anyone who doesn't know, Simon, you all Bone Digital, fully digital, obviously.
Yep.
But then Jenna, you have the print side of things, the tangible. You mentioned on your website, we like to produce things that you can touch or something, something along those lines. By the way, beautiful copy. I don't know who did it, but
Simon.
You did it, did you?
Some of it, yeah. Right. And
I was reading that in the peacefulness of the tram. I was like, oh my God, this is really nice.
Yeah, you're a
copywriter
as well.
I've only got one tone of voice, and that's like super earnest when I'm writing. So I've been told that.
Well, it really touched me, man. It was
that's good. It's good. Yeah,
I want to buy one of those notebooks.
Yeah, very good.
We'll talk about that later.
Yeah, cool.
But yeah, it's like completely separate spectrums. So separate sides of the spectrum, I should say. And how do you guys come up with such a high level of quality being so different, I would say, if that's fair to say? Who wants to start? This is the thing, like, we're going to have to be taking turns, guys.
I mean, I think, you know, what's kind of underpins both of the, you know, the businesses is this focus on output and this focus on execution. Mm-hmm. And that's kind of primarily what both Hungry Workshop and Bone really care about, is a really high quality execution. And and that comes from being on the other side of the equation, where you're, you know, because we both have creative design backgrounds, and Jenna's still very much doing design work. And so we understand what it's like when you're handing your precious design, over. And you want people who you trust and care, you know, who care about the output.
Yeah. So who hired who at Hungry Workshop? Who was the first one?
I started.
Who you started? Okay.
Yeah.
Simon had to apply for the job, right? Yeah. Is that what happened?
Pretty much.
Exactly, yeah. No, so I started volunteering at this historical village outside of Brisbane. And so they had all of these old printing presses in this big tin shed. And they also had like a tea shop and a machine shop and
functional.
Yeah, it's functional. Okay. They do like school tours and people would come and have a look.
Okay.
So I was learning there from these old retired printers who were incredible.
Oh, wow.
Retired
like,
printers.
Yeah, they were like 80 plus.
All right.
You learn from the best. Then.
Exactly.
I just imagine the guy from Toy Story fixing Woody. Remember that scene, like the really old guy?
Yeah.
Sorry, I tend to divert.
So Bob would have started printing at like 14 or something, right? Like,
all right.
Wow.
Okay.
Like out of
a whole life dedicated to printing.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And all he wanted to do was pass it on. And he was really passionate, but also like somewhat up with technology. Like he would still FaceTimes us and he's on Facebook a lot.
Right.
He films his own videos and so he really understood the like where letterpress could go.
Mm. Yeah, right.
Like in the beginning.
And you learn from him.
We learn from him.
Yeah.
So first it was like the hand fed foot treadle presses.
Yeah.
That you like a little sewing machine.
When you have to,
put it in by hand.
Yeah,
pay
right.
Pay attention, like you can't talk.
So
otherwise
your hand is gonna.
Yeah, because your hand will get switched.
It's gonna be letterpress.
Yeah.
For someone,
terrifying.
Jenna, for someone who doesn't know what a letterpress actually is, like, can you give us like a quick overview of that?
Yes. So the machines, You're better at
it. Sure.
I said Jenna, but it could be either of you, by the way.
No, I'll take that one, Alec. That's fine.
Letterpress printing, at in its purest form, is, it's one of the oldest forms of, printing in the Western world, but it's essentially a process of stamping. So a raised surface is inked and pressed into the paper. It's really, really that simple. There's a couple of ways of getting the raised surface. So, you might be familiar with movable type, so wood blocks. You can also use metal plates or polymer plates, which is primarily what Hungry Workshop uses. And that allows us to get the, modern design into a format that is letterpress printable.
Yeah, so the classical.
Yeah.
What I find really interesting is that this actually just came to my mind when you say plate.
I think she
is that you guys actually have to create whatever it is that's going to come out on the final outcome. You have to create a plate.
That's right. Yeah. So
what is that process like?
Well, Jenna can speak to that better than I can.
So we don't actually make the plates ourselves.
Okay.
So that's done externally. We see the real art in what we do with that artwork and that plate.
Okay.
Same with the metal knives, die cutting forms that we get made that cut things out. So we see the art in using the letterpress presses rather than making the plates, because that's a whole other business.
Yeah, it would be.
A whole other thing, whole other specialty in craft.
Mm.
And once that's created, that stays with you, right? Like that's kind of a forever piece.
Yeah.
What do you do with all of them?
Well, we recycle the plastic ones.
Oh,
so
wow.
Polymer
okay.
is a plastic, so that's and they only last for about 6 months for reusing.
Okay. Yep.
The metal ones, which we sometimes get metal letterpress plates for foil plates.
Right.
They're like, that thick and metal.
Yeah.
Like,
they're heavy as well, right?
They're heavy. Yeah.
Like different sizes and shapes.
Yeah. So we can also recycle those, or sometimes we give them to people, like with the projects, because it's
memorabilia.
Exactly. It looks beautiful sitting up.
Yeah.
It's like shiny metal.
If you really like the design, you keep it, but if you don't like it, you give it back to me. is that what you're saying?
We can give all the invitations back, because it's like we're never going to use this again.
Of course.
But we can use foil plates again over and over and over. So for reprints, we do. Keep them on file.
I remember when I was back at uni getting into screen printing, we had a little shop at uni. It's probably like 4 screens maybe.
Yeah.
And we were learning how to do that, right? And I remember going through the whole process, how hard is it to get one screen done, and why when you go to the screen printer they don't want to do one t-shirt for you or one tote bag, it's like so much harder, it's not worth it.
Yeah.
And I imagine it would be similar in letterpress, right?
Exactly, yeah. We don't do many one-offs. We have done them, but not many.
I'm sure there'll be some kind of educational process there for you guys. Like, someone comes in, they've got an idea. Surely, you have to run them through what it is like. So, A, they appreciate, what it's going behind the scenes of the craft. But, not everyone will understand all of this. You have to create a plate and, it's not such a thing of that overnight thing. We can't just in digital space, it happens you kind of create stuff and then it quickly becomes obsolete. But, this it's a little bit more of a process.
Mm.
I mean, a lot of that education job is done, by Jenna and the team through social media,
That's one of our pillars of social media is education.
Oh, right. Okay. What are the other pillars?
What
are you on the spot?
next
question.
education, inspiration
for
all the designers that we work with. And I don't know what the third one is.
Was education a pillar in, were you guys focused on education because of that? Because you had a lot of people kind of going, I don't know what it entails, what the process entails.
Both for educating people for jobs, but also just passing on knowledge. They're they're incredible presses. Our newest press is 50 years old. And
50.
Our oldest 50.
Wow.
Our oldest one is from 1902. So they're gonna last forever beyond us, beyond Hungry Workshop maybe, or Hungry Workshop will continue without us. I want to
pass it down to the kids. They're quite young now.
Yeah.
They only get the finger painting.
Yeah.
Like visiting. They're pretty. They're
must be the smell and the sounds.
Yeah.
And,
they always want to bring me home.
My grandfather, my dad's side, he used to own a zapateria. I just forgot.
A repair shoe shop.
A shoe shop. Yeah, but they will make it from scratch, like leather and everything. So you will go in there, you will go into the to the shop, and then you will smell like the glue and the leather, and then you hear the sounds. And I was very, very little, but I still kind of remember, you know, some images from that. And must be something similar to them. If they want to pick that up, you know, they want to carry on.
They might.
They can go on Instagram and learn how to do it, right?
it's all right.
Anyone can now.
It's interesting as well. Like, I imagine like each machine will come with a story, you know? Do you get to know where it came from and, you know, what was the life before the Hungry Workshop?
Some of the presses, you know. We're in the midst of making a big operating manual at the moment. And so, like, that's part of it, like, writing down the history of each press and what we actually know about it. And
like an internal document? Like
yeah, it's just an internal one.
Beautifully printed. Wow.
Maybe the cover.
Online right now.
Oh, is it?
Right.
Yeah, because it's supposed to be a living document. If we print it,
of course.
That'll be that version of it.
I don't know why my head went straight to the physical and you pass it down generations.
We do have a little prize, like, once we finish all the sections, because there's a lot of sections. Once we finish all the sections, we're all going to get matching jumpsuits with, like, our logos on it. That's going to be our physical version.
Yeah, nice.
Yeah.
That's one thing, like I think talking about that physical and digital, like I've always loved, I was telling you guys before this, that I don't know if I told you this already, but many years ago, I commissioned some work to the guys, and I was working at a digital agency at the time, and yet we actually went to Letterpress to create, you know, our business cards. And that was at the time where, like, people were saying business cards are going to die. No one's going to use business cards anymore. And you know, we printed these cards and they were so effective when they handed them to clients or prospects. Like, people will literally take a time to, like, feel it.
Yeah.
And yet we're doing something completely different. We're in the digital space, but it was really effective. I think that was that really spoke to me because
I
was gonna say, I think that's the artifact of, you know, we spend so much time, you know, online in digital spaces that when you do get something physical, it does really stand out and, you know, really cuts through.
Yeah, and us then, I'm gonna sell soul here, but the new generation's come in, and I've witnessed how, you know, we've got print jobs at digital agencies. And then somehow the crop marks are still there, or the color bar is still there. And that's because the people, like the account managers or someone receiving the job, they don't know that needs to be out of it. They think it's part of the design, right?
Yeah.
So we have to literally done it on the spot before putting it up on the wall. Because I had not, and then they will be like, oh, sorry, I thought that was part of design. Like, it looks cool, yeah. I mean, it looks cool, but it's not part of the design. Right?
It does look cool.
It does look cool. Like, you see all the crop marks, and it's like, yeah, but it's not part of the design. And that's when that was a point in time where I was like, man, I'm getting really old because I understand what this is.
Yeah.
But also, like, how detached is the physical job or work from the digital aspect of things, right?
Yeah.
But yet you guys still manage to, you know, keep... Do you guys talk work when you get home?
Yeah.
We used to talk of work a lot more.
A lot more?
Yeah.
Is there like a set rule now? Like,
no.
Past 9 p.m., that's it, you know?
No, I think because Simon was doing, you were still doing one day at Hungry as of last year.
Yeah.
Like, it kind of went from full time and then
went
less and less and less as Bone needed you more and more.
Yeah.
And we used to talk about work a lot then, but now it's nice because it's like a separation of work. Like, you can ask me questions, but I have a totally, like, I don't understand enough about what's going on.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I
have
advice that's not like totally wrapped up in everything that's happening.
And we do have, you know, a strict no business in the bedroom rule.
Yeah.
Like, if you're lying down, can't talk about
work. Yeah. I mean, Ali and I, you can still go home and talk shit about your co-founder, right?
Yeah.
But these guys, they can't.
The time.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah.
But you guys couldn't do that because, you know, could, but then it'll be, you know, consequences to that.
Yeah,
but I like that rule. I used to work with another studio in Collingwood, in Carlton as a freelancer back in the day. And it was owned by a couple, like a married couple, just like you guys. But we were literally working on the granny house of their house. And then, so if you get there early enough, you will hear all the screaming from the girls, before school. Yeah. No, legit. And then they will come here. It's like, they will come to see it like, sorry, Ali, just going to be 5 minutes late.
Wow,
like, I was like,
really?
Yeah, whatever. And then in the background, you can hear like all the, you know. And then we'll go off and then we'll come back like
you're
10 years
like
later.
You're part of the family at that point.
And then lunchtime, because it was the granny flat at the back, there was like a little courtyard there in the middle of the house. Lunchtime, we'll just sit there and then have lunch. And then if it was school holidays, the girls will come out and then just chat to you. And one of the things they say is like, man, we just tend to talk about work all the time, like the couple.
Yeah.
And I guess they're still together. They still have a thriving business. So yeah. I guess they found the way to do it. But
Were you guys like, how long do you work together for at the Hungry Workshop?
Well,
started 12 years ago.
12 yeah. years. And yeah.
How long have you been married for?
12 Wait. Years.
Yeah.
You see how it took longer to answer that question than
the
question?
I got confused. Yeah. We started Hungry Workshop like 3 months after we got married.
Yeah.
We came up with we came up with the name on our honeymoon.
That's right.
Really?
Yeah, we know like the building that we were at. It's kind of a funny.
Wow. Where was that?
It was at the
Tenement Museum.
The Tenement Museum.
Yeah.
Where is it?
The Tenement Museum in New York. So we were kicking around New York on our honeymoon, and we went. We were touring around, and.
And did you know it was going to be a letterpress?
Yeah. We were kind of warming up to it.
You were destined to it.
Did we have a printing press? Yeah, we must have. We got offered a printing press by the people who were teaching us. And it wasn't just like, here's a little printing press. It was like the size of this table.
Right.
You know,
right, yeah, yeah.
1.5-ton printing press.
Okay.
And
we lived in a two-bed, like a two-story apartment.
Okay.
And it would have gone straight to the floor.
I thought you were going to say like, your wedding invitation was shit, so you decided to do your own. Hungry Workshop.
Yeah, we did our own.
This is kind of a cheesy question, but can I ask as well, where does the name come from? Why the Hungry Workshop?
Well, no. I mean, look,
is this one of the subjects?
No, it came up during the honeymoon, so must be some backstory.
No, it was only because we were thinking about trying to name the business at the time. But we, the idea is that this kind of insatiable appetite that people in the creative industries have. There's that kind of adage where, you're never really finished with whatever it is that you're working on. It's taken away from you by the deadline, you've got to get it done.
Budget,
it's got to go.
Yeah,
otherwise you would keep working on it for, forever.
Yeah.
And I think there's a real kind of, a passion for, creativity and a real kind of hunger to do good work.
That's
and,
the thing, man.
And I think that's where it comes
from. Working forever, you just that's it, mate. Like print, that's it. You print it, it's out.
Mm.
There's not much you can do after that. Digital. Yeah. So many times I look at my designs out there as like, I have to come back and fix things.
Yeah.
I'm gonna call the dev.
Yeah.
I'm gonna do it myself. Well, I don't call it, but
Do you fix things?
Like,
do you remember to do those things?
No, I never do it. but it's always bugging me. It's
the file
I can do it. Like if you letterpress something, it's done. Like.
Yeah.
And then on to the next thing, right?
Yeah.
I mean, you might have learned from that.
You might regret things, but
yeah. Yeah, but there's really nothing you can do about it. Yeah, Simon, on the other hand, he can get into the matrix and then fix everything there.
Yeah, I mean, look, forever. I mean, that's the pros and, one of the pros and cons of, digital, working in digital. Like, you can iterate on it. It can be... it can be worked on and improved, and there is...
Hence MVP.
Yeah.
Term,
yeah,
right?
Exactly. Whereas, print, you've got to get it right.
What is the most expensive fuck up you've ever had?
Ooh.
In print.
The most expensive one is when sometimes we glue two sheets of paper together, or even three.
Meaning is like three blank?
No, yeah, three blank, but to be different colors. So it's like red and
blue, like the sandwich kind of thing.
Yeah, so you need a sandwich of paper. And so that's custom made paper.
Right.
And so if you've messed that up.
Oh, so before it goes into print, you need to custom make that.
Custom make
that. If that goes wrong.
And if you do something wrong on that, like there's an error on the plate or you mess up the names or something like that, then you have to make all the paper again, which means like buying all of
it. So hang on, you letterpress first.
You press it first.
You duplex it. You go into, and then it goes into. But why is it so expensive if it hasn't gone through that?
Because it's like three sheets of paper.
Oh, I'm guessing it's like big. Yeah. It's not like a A5.
Mm. No, it would be like,
okay, gotcha.
And hundreds of them.
Yeah, so how much?
I would guess maybe like 3,000-4,000.
If you put those three together, that'll be...
Multiply.
Multiply, yeah.
Wow. Like you obviously have to think before it happens in a way, right? Like it's like, yes, it's ready to go. Whereas with digital, that mentality, it's always going. It's like, it's always ready to go. You're like constantly doing something and you change it and you iterate on it.
But you have the luxury to do it live on the spot, whereas like duplex, what's the term?
Duplex.
Duplexing is like...
You have to plan for that.
You have to plan. Exactly. Do you feel like being in the digital space, I'm curious as well, like, you know, you've transitioned, we were saying before, literally, you guys sit on both sides of the spectrum.
Yeah.
And it's also interesting because you happen to be a couple.
Yeah.
So it's like, you've got both skill sets, right?
Yep.
But then, how did you feel? Like, what was your transition like from such a thorough process into digital?
Yeah, I mean, look, it was a really natural process because, we were at Hungry Workshop. We were doing some design and print projects. And, we were designing a website for something that we had, a project that we were working on. And we were looking for developers to help us. And, I found two devs, James and Andy, who were the other partners in the business at Bone.
Okay.
And, I sent off my artwork to them, and they sent me back a website that was way better than what I sent them. They understood what I was trying to achieve, mm-hmm. what the intent was, and, made it really, hum. And that's really kind of similar to what happens at Hungry Workshop when, we'll get design work from a client and, it might not be perfectly set up for letterpress production.
Yeah.
So you'll need to make adjustments or understand the intent and, work with them to improve on it. And that's what these guys did for me. And we saw like a really, common ground there. And so I approached these guys and said, how about we start a little development agency.
Just casually.
How about we start a little development agency, the three of us, and we'll have, it'll be the same ethos as Hungry Workshop, where we're, we're trying to work with really great creatives and really, make those projects, come alive and improve on them, as best as we can.
Yeah.
And I was expecting them to scratch their heads and, finish their coffee and say, oh, this is interesting.
What were they doing, freelancing? Or were they working full-time?
They had a little business and they'd been working together for a long time. But, what I was proposing was kind of slightly different and a bit more focused.
Mm-hmm.
They didn't even think about it. They were like, yeah, let's do it. I haven't really thought any further than this. So.
Would you consider...
That's the
end of my pitch. I don't know what we do yet.
What are we going to be called?
So it was a really good process and really natural kind of transition. And that's kind of what underpins both businesses is really common. It sounds like opposite ends of the spectrum, but fundamentally the principle of what we do is exactly the same.
Yeah, 100%.
There is still craft in digital, and like we always have this conversation as well that I think UI UX has evolved quite a lot from where it started, but there is still an art to it. There's still the level of detail that you have to put in. It is a pretty thorough process still, actually.
Yeah, when done properly, I think any of the skill sets around this table, even the video right now.
Yeah, absolutely.
And it's you just nailed it there. Like, you need to find the right people when you give them a job or an idea and they can build on top of that. Like, you don't want to go backwards,
100%. Yeah, and I think, from the experience that I had, I knew that there would be other people out there who were, who understood what they wanted to get out of the web, but couldn't perfectly articulate it.
Mm-hmm.
There's UI UX experts who are really, really good at communicating that.
Mm-hmm.
But what we want to do is help kind of bridge that gap. And we know what's good.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody on our team, the majority of people on our team have creative backgrounds, really interested in good design.
Mm-hmm.
And so, it's our job to help facilitate that.
Yeah.
There was a time, I remember this so distinctively where...
You want to drink that?
Yeah, I'm not.
You haven't
alone? As a designer, you would create something. And then it goes on to the development team. And there was just... that gap was really hard to bridge because...
Totally.
the design didn't reflect in the development.
Yep.
And I don't know whether it was lack of communication or it was just no, you know, clear process, but, you know, I love the fact you're talking a little bit about that. It's just like you're trying to find that cohesion between
the two. And I think there's a couple of reasons why that happens. And I think, you know, part of that is, you know, development is very technical, you know, and you need a technical engineering mindset. And there's very, very much, there's a lot of, you know, creativity in executing things efficiently and, you know, technically well.
Yeah.
But the kind of appreciation or the understanding of the intent of the visual design is another end of the spectrum. And you know, we kind of, you know, everybody on our team, thank you.
Okay.
Is, you're kind of across both ideas. And, you know, you were talking about unicorns before, like, they're the people that we're looking for, you know, because we don't just want people who are super, you know,
just coding,
but also like require super prescriptive input.
Yeah,
you know, we want the people to be able to take input, understand the intent, and elevate it. You know, get it,
totally.
Make it better.
We've worked with developers who can create something. And they're really good at what they do, but you kind of have to hold their hand a little bit, whereas you have other developers who will instantly get it and they'll just take it to the next level.
Yeah, I mean, we just got briefed on a job the other day for an organization out of Sydney, and, you know, they've, you know, part of the request for us is to come up with some ideas for how to treat the animations, and, you know, they've got some really beautiful assets on the page, some really beautiful 3D bits and pieces, and, you know, we're really excited by the opportunity to go away, think about what it is that they're trying to achieve, what these things could do, and feedback some ideas and some references about how we can, you know, make it better.
Awesome.
And it's an ideal project, you know?
Hey, Jenna, is there, excuse me, is there a project or something that you're working on, or are you thinking about merging Simon's skills with Hungry Workshop? Maybe some scanning with your devices, or, you know, I don't know, I'm just talking crap here, but is there something that you can share that is like merging both skill sets?
Any collabs.
One thing we do want to do, and I don't think Simon's on board with this.
We'll see you after this chat.
Oh,
yeah.
We have this giant roller door at work.
Okay.
Oh, yeah.
Like our big roller door covers up our.
So I was like, roller door again.
Yeah, here we go.
Here we go.
And so the guys at work were like, what if we painted a giant QR code?
Oh,
like roller
door
size QR code.
Right.
On the roller door. And then make that QR code like change to different things? Because you can do dynamic QR codes, that was called.
Yeah, yeah.
Where you
just
change the things.
Yeah.
You're changing things. So
what
a
show.
Like, I don't know, but like a video.
So I was like, nothing good because we haven't done it.
Like projects or
that'd be cool. Yeah. And this is at your shop.
It'll be in front of it.
Because it's like kind of a warehouse that you drive by.
You get a lot of foot traffic, and
I like it.
We get some foot traffic.
At least
we'll
get curious people. That will get sparks of curiosity. People are like,
there's no branding outside, is it? Or there is.
No, we need to put aside.
We need to do something on the roller.
Maybe that's a QR code, right? It's right there. And then people go, what is in this shop? They scan it.
The good thing about QR codes now. We're going to play devil's advocate, right? You're on Simon's side. I'm on Jenna's side. No, I was going to say, the thing about QR codes now, after 2 years of pandemic, is that everyone knows what a QR code is.
Yeah.
They're
right?
Very fluent.
Yeah. Though I've seen cases on LinkedIn of people saying, what do I do with all these photos in my phone? And they're like, there's like a camera roll of photos of QR codes.
Yeah.
You know? Do you get it?
Yeah.
Like, and I don't know if that was a real thing or not, but I thought it was really funny. And that's like, that's a very edge game.
Yeah. I remember working in the ad agency, you know, before we started Hungry Workshop. This guy came in. This must have been a couple of years before we started Hungry Workshop. This guy came in and he was like, QR codes. Let me tell you all about QR codes.
They're the next
and we're all looking around going,
right?
Man, this is never going to catch on.
Yeah.
But you're right. You know, like,
I mean, there's one right here. We all know what to do with that.
Everyone's really fluent with it.
I tell you what, though, I do think that the only reason why they became what they are today was because of the pandemic and COVID and all that. Like, I think there was a big use of them in China, I believe. China was big on QR codes.
Before that?
Yeah, but in Australia, you talk about QR codes, and it was like this thing that people knew
they,
about.
They were around, and then they died, right? And then they came back. I think it's like QR codes, like, I remember designing things with QR codes. Yeah. It wasn't big enough. It was like too big, or like if I want to scan it. I remember a brief coming through in my freelance days. It's like a QR code on a billboard.
Oh no!
I was like, okay, but what's
going to cause
should...
traffic accidents?
How's that going to work? How big does it have to be? And then it's like it's taking too much attention. But you know, companies like I don't know. I think this platform is Mr. Yum.
Mm-hmm.
They leverage off that. Like they understood the opportunity, and it's like, let's do it.
I mean, we've got a brief on our desk for a gallery site at the moment, and you know they want to really leverage QR codes throughout their site to pull people through to different content on their on their website to add depth to whatever people are looking at. And I think it's a really good idea. And I think.
Back to the roller door.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to seeing this Friday.
I don't know if it'll work on like the bubbly metal, but
it's only one way to find out.
There's only one way to find out. That's true.
But
we have letterpress printed QR codes. That seems.
Oh, really?
Yeah, we tested it like maybe a year or so ago.
Works.
Yeah, it works fine.
Yeah.
It's for restaurants.
Yeah.
Like,
okay.
Or business cards.
Something nice looking
and
it,
like,
good
gets
feel
you
to
some
it.
More information.
Mm.
Yeah.
Nice.
But it would be a good opportunity to peer through the roller door when it's closed and see what's going
on
inside.
Inside, like inside the. No, this is getting
like
too.
As if you're open.
Like if you're open, yeah.
That'd be cool.
Right? Yeah.
Especially because no one knows what's in there.
I don't know what it takes to do all that, but it sounds pretty cool. An immersive experience.
Yeah.
I mean, you're into Web3 and all that stuff, right? Like you're interested in it.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely.
Like, I'm not saying this is going to be a Web3 experience, but I think it goes along the lines, you know, that. But I feel like Jen is saying, do it. And then I'll paint it, and then you figure out the rest.
Yeah,
and that's where you're like, no.
I think there's I haven't quite worked it out, but there's definitely something between the Web3, the nature of kind of limited availability, and the physicality of 100%. What happens at Hungry Workshop. I don't really know exactly where that interfaces or where that lines up. But there's definitely something there that needs to be unpacked.
There definitely are products out there linking what they call now, they now call like a digital experience. So they link a piece of garment to your digital NFT or your blockchain item. And you're like, what?
Yeah.
You're telling me the roller door can be an NFT? So, and what you do is you link those two worlds.
Yeah.
And if I sell you this jumper, then my NFT goes with you, and you have like a whole story of it.
Wow.
Yeah, I mean, I'm saying a jumper, but I'm sure there are other applications far more valuable than a jumper.
Yeah. But, I mean,
thank you.
Oh, we got an extra serve of wok.
Yes.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Yeah, the where it makes a lot of sense for me is in crowdfunding as well.
Okay.
You know, where, you know, there's already people out there investing in different projects, and if you attached, you know, NFT ownership to that, it'd be fantastic.
Yeah, I feel like the whole technology behind it is really exciting because there's a lot of opportunity beyond what it's doing currently.
Yes,
there's so much out there, but it's still like very early days.
I feel like I feel like your side, I don't know if it's a side project anymore or if it's like a proper project, but the notebooks.
Yep.
That I think it could be something there. When you link the physical and the digital.
That's a good idea.
Yeah. I'll
talk about that later.
Let's have some food because it's coming now.
Yeah,
and we can chat about that. How's that?
Sounds good.
Well, thanks for coming, guys.
Thanks for having us.
No, it's been great. Hopefully we'll get you another drink after this. Don't worry about the letterpress. It's always itself
out. Don't worry about that job.
Yeah. Anything else you guys want to share before we wrap it up?
No, not really. I mean, look, thank you very much for having us. It was a really good chat.
Pleasure.
Yeah.
Awesome. We'll keep the drinks coming.
Yeah, awesome.
And thank you very much. And which one's the camera? Is that my camera? Yeah. See you on the next one. Adios.
Yeah, very good.